Claire, I'm sure there are other points that people would like to build on, but I'm going to open up the third issue and invite you to write your questions and we can return to these. But there are another couple of issues that we felt was really important to raise. That this next one has a lot of political heat in it, I suppose, sadly, because it's very much about people in distress. It's refugees and asylum seekers. And Camilla Cowley, you're going to be asking the first question.
There's a series of questions that are all interconnected, but the big topic most recently has been the regional processing centre. And my involvement began many years ago, and the terms being used then are still being used today, queue jumpers. So thousands of Afghans who have no country signatory to the convention closer than Australia to actually go to, thousands of them arrived in Indonesia, joined the UNHCR queue, were deemed to be refugees and have been waiting there for many, many years for a resettlement country. The Australian policy to date has been to take only very few of them, because it is seen that taking them would create what you call a honeypot. If the UNHCR in Indonesia finds them to be refugees and Australia then takes them, the logic says that thousands more would come to Indonesia to join that queue. On this basis, is a regional processing facility, whether it be in East Timor or Nauru, which is funded by Australia, just going to cause another honeypot? And where should those fleeing places like Afghanistan in particular go to join a queue from which they have any hope of resettlement? Because quite honestly, other countries around the world see those in Indonesia who have been found to be refugees to be our responsibility.
That question, I think, originally is going to Brett.
Well, I think both Brett and Claire.
For each of you, please. Senator Mason, we'll start with you.
Sure. Camilla, thanks.
Again, the microphone. Sorry.
I always forget. All right, I apologise. Sorry.
Dementia.
It is dementia. It must be hereditary. Camilla, you're right. Clearly, under the UN Refugee Convention, I did my research this afternoon. You join the queue in the first or nearest country which is a signatory to the convention. I think that's right, isn't it? That's the rule. All right. The bottom line is there are about 15 to 20 million people in effect who are refugees in the world at the moment. Something like that. And we take in Australia about 13,750. Let's say 15,000 a year. That's in effect the cap. The issue for, well, when we're in government, and it's the same for the current government, the issue is, who do you let in? Do you let in, because there are plenty of people qualify as refugees, as I say, 15 to 20 million people. Do you let the people in who can somehow make their way to Indonesia? Either they pay to get there or they get there some other way. Or do you take people that may have been sitting in a refugee camp in Kenya, you know, for 10 years with a penniless widow that may have even a stronger case? Do you take them? Because you can't take everyone. Now, I've worked, and Camilla knows this, for the UN in a human rights component in the 90s in Cambodia. You know, I've been to refugee camps in Rana Prathet, just after the war, after Pol Pot was thrown out, and, of course, the Vietnamese government came in, and there were refugees all throughout Western Thailand. And sure, at one level, all of these people are refugees, and at one level we would love to take them all, but we can't. And so in a sense you have to prioritise who gets in. And the way we do it, I think at the moment, the way the current government does it is, if not perfect, about right. It's a very, very difficult issue. All issues tonight, Camilla, are difficult. It's a very difficult issue. I don't know. Do you take people that can get to Indonesia one way or another, whether they pay a people smuggler or not, or do you take the penniless widow in Kenya who's been there for 10 years with her kids? It's difficult.
Claire.
Our policy has been clearly to look at a combined response in this area, and I have great difficulty talking about people as a group or as some kind of mass, because in my eyes I see the individuals, most of whom, the ones who have come to Australia, you get to know and you see and you hear about their stories. In terms of what our position is in terms of the future, we have agreed that there needs to be a regional United Nations response to the global issue, and I use these terms again because they are. As Brett's put the numbers out in terms of the numbers that are across the world displaced for any number of reasons, and we just can't talk about Afghanistan in isolation, Camilla. When we're talking about Afghanistan, as Brett's already done, you bring in the competing needs of a whole range of people who are fleeing countries for genuine reason. And there has been various forms of regulation over the preceding years. Some have failed dismally. Some have attempted to work. We have to balance, and I know that word gets very tiresome to keep talking about balance. We have to talk about balancing, treating individuals with respect through whatever system they are, because there will always be a system. It doesn't matter which government is in place. There will be a system, because there will not be open entry to our country ever again. That's not going to happen. So there'll be a system of some sort in place, and in that process what we have to do is make sure that people who are caught up in that system are treated with respect and dignity and not made to feel even worse than they have in the past. So the Gillard plan is to actually have a regional UN-endorsed UNHCR process in a place to be agreed, and it has not been agreed yet, but in a place that is signatory to the UN Convention, so that they're already bound by an international agreement, and that the responsibility is shared. There are concerns about the treatment of people in Indonesia, and people who've had the opportunity to visit some of the camps in Indonesia have come back with some pretty rough stories about the conditions are not to the level that we would expect people to be treated. And there are international discussions between Australia and Indonesia on that point. What we have to do is agree what is the right way of assessment, and there will always be an assessment. And the Australian assessment is based on the UNHCR process, and it has not changed. People who are seeking asylum in this country have to prove themselves that they are in a refugee situation through the UNHCR. They have to prove their identity and their health status, and that's been the same. What our government has done has changed a whole lot of other things, and I won't go into that now, but you know what they are. But in terms of the regional solution and your question, we believe it needs to be a regional solution again. We don't know. We are actually working, and we'll continue to work with governments to see where that can be. We are not precluding, as Wendy has talked about, looking at solutions that engage with communities in Australia. We are not putting anything out of the question. But there's no answer that I can give that will actually address the individual needs of the people who are so traumatised. So we are sticking by the UN process.
Camilla, do you want to ask your second question?
Yes, I do. To me, the main difference between the Labor policy and the Liberal coalition policy, when we come talking about those who arrive by boats, is TPVs, the reintroduction of temporary protection visas, and I think most Australians are aware of the trauma that was visited upon people, not only the detention, but then the waiting for many, many years, and Brett knows about it because he met quite a few of the young guys of Tigers. So we have two different questions really tied into the one, because there is no suggestion that the Labor Party will introduce temporary protection visas. And then we come to the question where this is seen as the honeypot that's drawing more boats. But we need to look at the fact that the numbers of boats actually rose after the introduction of the temporary protection visas back in 1999. The boats stopped coming when it seemed the Taliban had been defeated in Afghanistan. The boat numbers have risen again as those Hazaras in Afghanistan have realised that the Taliban has not been defeated. So Do you still believe that the TPVs are a deterrent? Do you believe, this will be to you first, Brett, do you believe that reopening Nauru, which will not be considered a regional processing centre, will it be in reopening Nauru and reintroducing temporary protection visas, do you see this as really a deterrent? Because most of those who were traumatised in Nauru for some years were eventually accepted in Australia, are probably nearly all Australian citizens now, so you would nearly think that it would be a means of punishing, not deterring, because it doesn't hold water as being a deterrent anymore.
Brett, I'm going to ask you to answer that, and then I'm going to invite Libby and Wendy to make a comment about the issues that we've talked about with asylum seekers. Thanks, Brett.
Thanks. You always ask such easy questions, Camilla, to answer. Fortunately, I did a little bit of homework because this actually is a complicated question. The Coalition does, yes, agree on offshore processing, and the Coalition's position would be that has operated as a deterrent, in effect. That would be the Coalition position. But can I say this, because this is actually quite technical. You ask, will the processing of asylum seekers in regional processing facilities and the reintroduction of TPVs be fully compliant with the Refugee Convention? Yes, it will. All right, so that's on the record. Yes, it will. Then you ask, with due process and rights to appeal? Yes, in the sense that the UNHCR guidelines will be followed. But, Camilla, of course, Australian law will not operate. You ask about rights to appeal and due process. Rights to appeal will operate under the UN Convention rather than Australian law because it's offshore processing. People follow that? So the applicable law will be the international law rather than Australian domestic law. And finally, you ask, and will those deemed to be refugees be given a place in Australia, or will you expect other countries to take these refugees? And the answer is they will be assessed and resettled where they are accepted. And you are right that in the past, and you and I have discussed this elsewhere, that in the past many have been accepted here in Australia. But, of course, the official answer would be they will be accepted and resettled where they are accepted.
Olivia, can I invite you to say, what's the Greens' policy? It's a complex issue with deep humanitarian moral concerns as well. Practical politics comes into it. Just briefly, what's the Greens' position on those issues we've raised?
Yes, OK. Well, obviously no offshore processing. It's deeply offensive, and it's just interesting to see the way the two major parties have come together again. And it's just disheartening to hear this talk that, we can't cope with the numbers of people, you know, we'll abide by the UNHCR when we're not even matching our commitments, funding commitments for the UNHCR. We don't meet international guidelines in our overseas aid. If we really want to be a responsible international citizen and not take responsibility for the vast numbers of refugees in our own region, you would think both major parties would therefore say, oh, well, maybe we should do our share to help these international agencies who are trying to manage this immense social problem. But no, we just get this inward-looking response from both major parties that appeals to the worst in Australians. And as an historian, I know that is not an accurate reflection of the Australian community. I was teaching this week on the foundation of the UN. Australia played such an important part on the world stage after World War II, and our message was, we're a small nation. We want to see a UN in which the rights of small nations will be respected, because the only way you can have a safe and secure world is when we all act with decency to one another and respect our separate rights. And yet, you know, here's Australia admitting it's a small country. We can't cope with this big refugee problem. We can afford to send troops overseas, but we can't afford to do the right thing. And I just wish them both major parties would stop this language, such as honeypot, which is code for saying, yes, feel resentful towards these people when they are victims. So one of the first important points to note about the Greens' policy is we would rescind the fake migration zone and resort to our true national borders, which were simply put in place to make it more difficult for refugees. And we would accept the processing of asylum seekers in Australia under a much more humane process. We want to see processes for proper review, not just decisions made by the minister. And if the minister doesn't, you know, if you're not a refugee, deemed to be a genuine refugee, then the minister can give you a humanitarian visa and the minister can rescind that if they so choose. Well, we think it's time that there were proper, open and accountable processes put in place, and that the only way in which you're going to deal with the deep personal problems that refugees bring to this country is by locating them in the community and making normal services available to them so that they can work, so that they can afford to pay for healthcare and so on. And that's going to be the way in which you would have a fair and just and humane policy, and then Australians would feel less afraid of people and realise what a wonderful contribution refugees have made to this country and will continue to make, and what generous people they will be when they are accepted and welcomed in our community.
Thank you. Libby and Wendy.
As a Christian, I can't help but ask the question, "There but by the grace of God go I." So every time I hear about the asylum seekers and the refugees, my heart is hurting, because they are people like you and I. It's a very difficult question, and I don't doubt that the major parties are wanting to do what is best, but I also don't doubt that the major parties are using it as a political game as well, and I do think that they do whip up fear in the community that is not necessarily there and not reflected by the Australian people. Because I see, when I go around, that the Australian people actually really welcome the refugees. And in any situation that I've been in, and my husband and I have looked after a number of different refugee-type people in different communities, so the Sudanese down in the Logan area and that sort of thing. And, you know, the people just gather around them and love them to bits and help them so much. So I think the Australian people are ready to welcome people in. And I do think that the Family First policy is actually to have hostel-type facilities, and these would be in rural areas, and we would have the ability to teach English, they would be able to work, there would be recreation, there would be access to medical and legal consultations, but there would be also supervision of those hostel facilities until the people were able to be cleared of medical or any possible danger to Australia at all. You know, so they would have to be cleared. But I do think that we need to foster an attitude in Australia of loving our neighbour and being prepared to help those who really can't help themselves at the moment.
Thanks, Wendy.